Watt began. She retreated a step, shaking her head. Watt realized that his hand felt cold without hers in it. He was shocked to see small tears gathering thickly in her lashes, sliding down her cheeks.
"You saw what I did, Watt. You know my mistakes are worst of all. I just wish..."
"Here it is," Nadia said eagerly, as Watt pulled Lita close, folding her into his arms. He felt oddly nervous, and at the same time relieved that Lita was finally talking about that night, after all this time.
"Shh, it's okay,"
he murmured, running his hand lightly over her back.
"It'll be okay, don't worry."
"I didn't mean to. You know that,"
Lita said, so quietly that he couldn't be sure what he'd heard. His heart skipped a beat.
"Make her clarify," Nadia urged. "This isn't enough for evidence. Make her say the whole sentence."
"You didn't mean to what?" Watt asked, hating himself, and yet saying it anyway, because the words were written right there, prompted by Nadia, and he was too shocked right now to formulate any words of his own. Lita looked up at him, her eyes wide and trusting, brimming with tears.
"Eris," she said simply. "You know I didn't mean to push her off. I just wanted her to back away. She kept trying to hug me, and after everything she did to me, I just wanted her to leave me alone."
Her hand clutched his so tight he felt like the blood was being cut off.
"It was an accident. I didn't mean for her to fall. I never, ever meant that."
"Got it," Nadia declared, in evident satisfaction. But Watt's human mind was snagging on Lita's words.
"What do you mean, after everything she did to you?"
"You didn't know?"
Lita asked. Watt shook his head dumbly.
"I thought you knew everything."
This time her words were completely devoid of sarcasm.
"I never really paid much attention to Eris," he said,
which was true. Avery had always been the one he'd focused on. Lita nodded, as if that made sense to her.
"Eris was having an affair with my dad before she died."
"What?
Nadia, how did we miss that?" Watt felt a sickening sensation of being trapped in something much bigger than he was. He'd fallen too deep, and now he was at the bottom of a bottomless black hole, and he couldn't come up for air. Most of all, he felt an overwhelming sense of self-loathing. He had tricked Lita into opening up her most private, vulnerable self to him, all so he could destroy her. Lita reached for his hand, taking a shuddering breath.
"I don't know why I brought this up. Let's go back to the party."
"I'm sorry, I just..."
Watt snatched his hand away, ignoring Lita's startled look.
"Don't send that footage anywhere, Nadia. Don't you do a damn thing regarding Lita without my approval, okay?"
"What? What's wrong?"
Lita frowned, sounding puzzled, even worried for him. It killed him that she was thinking about him at all after what he'd just done to her. He took a step back, running a hand through his hair. He couldn't think, not with Lita so close, looking at him in that wide-eyed, wounded way. He felt dazed and shaky. What had happened to him? When had he become the type of person who tried to trick other people into revealing their darkest secrets?
"I can't right now. I need to... I'm sorry," he mumbled, and ran off,
steeling himself to the hurt that flashed across Lita's face. Lita. Lita stood there in shock as Watt's figure retreated into the cresting night. What the hell had just happened? She'd offered him her deepest and most dangerous truths, told him all the ugliness in her family, in herself, and he'd turned and run away. She sank onto a suspended bench, propelling it with her heels to rock slowly back and forth. She was far from the party now, in some sort of multi-level botanic garden. Around a corner, she heard the hushed voices of couples walking along the shadowed paths,
stealing furtive kisses. Colored lanterns bobbed along in their wakes. She felt very distant from them. Did Watt leave because of what she'd done to Eris? But he'd known that already. That was the nice thing about being with Watt, she'd thought, that they understood each other for who they were and all their secrets. Maybe Watt hadn't fully appreciated it until now. Maybe when she bared her soul and he realized all the darkness that lay coiled there, he had realized he wanted no part of it. Leda bit her lip, replaying the conversation in her mind, trying to determine what she'd done wrong. She felt strangely on edge. What was it about Watt that kept nagging at her? Hadn't there been something odd in his expression, his eyes? He hadn't blinked. The realization came to her all at once with an animalistic certainty. He'd been watching her the entire time without blinking, as if he'd been a cat patiently waiting for a mouse. Had Watt been filming their conversation? She thought wildly. Surely not, Leda's rational brain hastened to remind her. She would have noticed, would have heard Watt say, "Record video." That was how contacts worked, after all. She closed her eyes, slightly comforted. Except that Nadia was in his brain. It had been so easy for Leda to forget Nadia's presence, to get caught up in the excitement of being at the party with Watt. But of course Nadia had been there the whole time, listening and recording and transmitting and God knows what else. Leda had no idea what Watt was even capable of, with Nadia inside his mind. She curled her hand into a fist, so tight that the nails dug painfully into the flesh of her palm. But the pain was good. It kept her focused. She thought of all the times Watt had seemed to watch her a little too closely whenever anyone mentioned Eris. And he'd agreed to be her date to the under-the-sea party, and to rehab, so readily. She hadn't thought anything of it at the time, but it was strange, wasn't it, that he hadn't put up any sort of a fight? Could he have actually been playing her the whole time? Getting close to her in the hopes that something like this would happen, that Leda would eventually get drunk and trusting and admit the truth? Leda reached up to wipe away a tear. She shouldn't really be surprised. But it hurt more than she would have guessed, realizing that all time they'd spent together had been a lie. How stupid of her, to think that Watt could care about her for real. She didn't even blame him for wanting revenge. She would have done the same if their roles were reversed. Hadn't she said more than once that she and Watt were cut from the same cloth? An old, familiar instinct for self-preservation was stirring, urging her to fight fire with fire, to use every weapon in her arsenal to destroy Watt before he could destroy her. But Leda found that she didn't have the heart. Besides, with that quant in his brain, he'd probably already sent her confession video to the police. They might be coming for her right now. Leda felt a heavy dullness settling over her, turning her entire body to lead. Perhaps it was resignation, or despair. Leda Cole had never been resigned to anything before, but then she'd never met anyone who could best her, until Watt. To think that she'd found the one boy in the world who was her equal and fallen for him— Yet in typical Leda Cole fashion, she'd managed to make him her sworn enemy. She got up and trudged toward the nearest bar, a lonely table set up among the lemon trees near the edge of the garden path. It was so remote from the party that it felt as if someone, maybe Providence, had brought it here in her hour of need. She might be heading to prison tomorrow, after all. Might as well enjoy her last few hours as a free woman. Whiskey soda, Leda said automatically as she approached. And another after that. The bartender looked up at her, and for some reason Leda's brain sparked in recognition. Have we met? She asked. The girl shrugged. I work at altitude. My name's Mariel. She began to mix the cocktail with quick, practiced motions. And now you're here? Leda was still confused. The Fullers imported some of the altitude staff to work this party. Pretty over the top, huh?
Oh.
Lita hadn't heard about that, but it sounded like the Fullers.
Are you here alone?
The other girl slid the drink across the bar with a raised eyebrow.
At the moment, yes.
Lita frowned down at the glass, which was a dark, opaque black.
This cup is seriously morbid, she pointed out.
It looked like a goblet that lost souls would drink from in hell. As black as all her secrets, she thought, taking a gulp. The whiskey had an astringent bite she didn't recognize.
Sorry. All they gave me was black and white.
Mariel pulled out a white glass, but Lita shook her head. It wasn't worth the bother.
Well, Lita, no one should drink alone at a party like this,
Mariel insisted, and fixed a drink for herself.
Had she told this girl her name?
Lita startled, a little confused. The whiskey was hitting her faster than she thought. She felt a little like she was going to be sick, but she couldn't decide whether that was the drink or the thought of her confession video playing on all the global news feeds. For a moment, Lita thought she caught a glimpse of something eager and intent in Mariel's gaze. It puzzled her. She set down her half-empty drink to look up at the sky. It glowed with stars, scattered about like tiny pinpricks of something fervent and bright. Hope, maybe. But Lita knew there was no hope for her. She picked up the black goblet and braced herself for another sip of the biting whiskey, hoping it would obliterate the pain of what Watt had done. Avery hurried, breathless, toward the pulsing star in her field of vision that was leading her to Atlas. Thank God he'd never turned off location sharing, even after everything they'd said to each other. She made her way through crowds draped all in black and white, the only spots of color their paint-sticked faces, a discordant blur against the darkness. Avery pushed past all of it, heading toward that pulsing light as if it were her own personal North Star leading her home. She turned a corner and saw with relief that, yes, he was right there, beneath the shining yellow star inscribed on her contacts. He was frowning slightly, deep in conversation with their father and a group of investors. Avery reached up to smooth her hair, adjust the fine lace at her neckline, before venturing over.
Atlas, I need to talk to you.
She saw her dad flinch a little at the request, but it didn't matter. None of it mattered, as long as she and Atlas had each other. His eyes swept toward her for a moment, then away.
We're kind of busy right now.
The dismissal hurt, but she let it go.
Please!
Atlas wavered for a moment, then gave some excuse to the group and followed her a distance away.
What's going on?
He hissed, but she didn't answer, just led him determinedly downward to lower and still lower terraces until they were at a gateway marked No Access. She pushed it open and dragged Atlas onto the small, grim, dingy balcony behind it, crowded with machinery and jutting directly over the canal. The rush of water beneath them was loud in her ears.
Think we're far enough yet?
Atlas demanded sarcastically. She hated how hostile he sounded. Not like Atlas at all, but some stranger inhabiting his body. Ignoring the question, Avery grabbed the collar of his shirt and pulled him roughly down to kiss him. He was still her Atlas, she saw with relief. Same mouth, same hands, same shoulders as ever. She slid her hands over those shoulders to twine up in his hair, at the back of his neck where it curled just a little. I love you so much, and I'm sorry. Atlas pulled away, shaking his head.
This isn't fair, he said,
his voice only a little shaky.
You can't be furious with me for weeks and then just decide to kiss me here, at the most crowded party of our lives.
I'm sorry, she whispered.
What's going on with you, Avery? What happened to prompt this?
Atlas made an impatient gesture, taking in her mutilated dress, her tangled hair. The kiss. She told herself not to panic that he'd called her Avery and not Aves.
There's something you need to know about Calliope,
She's not what she seems.
That sounded a bit theatrical, so she tried again. She's a fraud, Atlas. She's been lying to you this whole time, playing you. She doesn't even like you.
What are you talking about?
She and her mom are...
She fumbled for the right word.
Con artists sounded like something out of a bad hollow.
Operators. They use people for their money, then move on to a new place with a new identity.
Carefully, haltingly, Avery explained the whole thing. She told Atlas about Calliope's various aliases, her mom's arrest record. She sent him the pics that Lita had found, of all their many identities. Through it all, he just nodded silently, scarcely blinking.
Shit.
Atlas muttered when she finally fell silent. He shook his head in disbelief, his brown eyes glazed over.
I know. I'm so sorry.
She wasn't really, though. She wanted Calliope gone, and Atlas back, and the world restored to its rightful order.
How did you learn all this?
Avery reached for his hand, lacing his fingers in hers.
I just did. I can't explain, but I promise it's all true.
A murmured cry rose up from the crowds above them as another round of fireworks began to launch. Avery didn't glance away from Atlas's face. He was very quiet, thinking everything over. He seemed lost in a world of his own making.
Don't worry,
she said softly, a little concerned by his silence.
I already told her to leave, and if she doesn't, we'll make her. We can do anything together.
Atlas withdrew his hand from hers in a sudden, jerky motion.
We aren't going to do anything. I'll handle this on my own.
Atlas!
Please don't! This is hard enough already.
He was looking determinedly at the water, which unnerved her, because it meant he couldn't even bear to look her in the eyes. Fireworks erupted in great black and white bursts overhead, casting otherworldly shadows that danced across his face.
I'm a little stunned, to be honest. And pissed off. Not that anything has happened between me and Calliope,
Atlas added, which made Avery's heart leap eagerly.
But I'm still exhausted,
he went on, his words heavy.
I need to get away from this. From all of it.
Exactly! We can get away together, you and me, like we planned!
Avery exclaimed. Now that Lita was back on her side and wanted to help her, there was nothing keeping them apart anymore. But Atlas shook his head.
We were right to end things when we did. We tried. But no matter how hard we try, we haven't been able to make it work.
He gave Avery a look that terrified her.
Do you know what Dad named the hotel in the Dark Tower?
Fana?
A sudden panic was creeping over her skin.
It means destroying yourself for the one you love.
Atlas spoke urgently.
That's us, Avery. Don't you see? We're literally destroying each other. It's too complicated, and there are too many people who can be hurt. Especially you and me.
So you don't love me anymore?
That was the only explanation that made sense. How could he love her and not want to be with her?
Of course I love you, Atlas insisted. I'll always love you. But love isn't necessarily enough. You can't build a life on it.
Yes, you can!
Avery cried out, her voice pitching wildly.
I'm just trying to be realistic,
Atlas said, and the reasonable way he spoke made her want to shake his shoulders and scream.
What do you think we're actually going to do? Go live on that remote island, just the two of us?
Yes, exactly!
And what happens when you're sick of it? When walking around that small island and reading books and eating fish isn't enough for you anymore?
He asked quietly.
I'll have you, and you'll be enough.
I don't know if I am.
Atlas's voice cracked, but she pretended not to hear it.
Honestly, I'm scared. I'm scared of losing you. But I'm even more scared of forcing you down a path you don't want to be on.
You're not forcing me to do anything,
Avery protested, but it was as if he hadn't heard.
You're incredible, Aves, Atlas said softly. You're far too intelligent and talented, too remarkable to spend your life shut away from the entire world. You belong in the world, laughing and traveling, having friends. You deserve to see everything the world has to offer, and I can't give you any of that.
You and I can have all those things. We'll make friends and travel, Avery started to say, but he was shaking his head.
And be looking over our shoulder every moment in case someone recognized us, in constant fear of being caught? No. Vermont showed me that's pretty much impossible.
Avery's voice was almost a whisper. I don't care about any of that. I would trade it all to be with you.
Atlas surprised her by taking her hands, clasping them together and wrapping his own hands tight around them.
I know you mean that when you say it now, but I'm terrified of the moment in 5 years when you turn to me and regret the choice you made. By then it might be too late for you to go back.
Atlas's breath was ragged. He looked close to tears. Instinctively, Avery knew that she couldn't let him cry in front of her for his sake. She took a step back, her own eyes brimming with grief, and waited.
Don't you see? It can't ever work for us. I'm just saving us heartache down the road.
Atlas said at last. Here it is, Avery thought with dreadful certainty. This was really and truly the end.
She couldn't take it anymore. She flung herself into Atlas's arms and kissed him, over and over. And this time Atlas returned the kisses, returned them wildly and passionately, and it made Avery's heart break because she knew deep down that he was kissing her goodbye. She clung tighter to him, pressing her body the whole length of his, trying to hold him so close that he could never leave, as if she might anchor him there through sheer force of will. She wished she could snatch each kiss from the air and tuck it away somewhere safe, because each kiss was one kiss closer to the final kiss of all. When they finally pulled apart, neither of them spoke. The river rushed on below them. The sounds of the party emanated down as if from another world.
Okay, then, she said at last, her voice small, because it seemed like one of them should say something.
Okay, then, Atlas repeated.
Tears gathered in Avery's eyes, but she swallowed them back. She needed to be strong right now, for Atlas's sake. So she held back the tears and nodded shakily, even though it cost her more than Atlas would ever know. Even though it felt like someone was holding a razor and inflicting a million small cuts all over her skin. Atlas started to turn away, but paused as if thinking better of it, and reached out to touch Avery one last time. He tucked a strand of hair behind her ear, traced the line of her jaw, brushed a finger lightly over her lower lip. As if he were blind and trying to recognize her through nothing but his fingertips. Avery closed her eyes. She concentrated on memorizing his touch, wanting to stop time and stop the world and hold on to this moment forever, because as long as her eyes were closed, she could believe that Atlas was still here, still hers.
I'm sorry, Aves, but I promise it's better this way, he said,
and then he was gone. Avery stood there a while, her eyes firmly shut, just herself and her secrets, and her heartbreak alone in the dark. Calliope had been dancing and laughing for hours with an almost frantic intensity, keeping an eye out for the Fuller siblings as she made her way through the party, though she hadn't seen either of them in a while. She took occasional sips from a glass of champagne. The wine tasted sour in her mouth. All too soon the night would be over, and Calliope would have to confess the truth to her mom. That she'd screwed everything up and they needed to leave, because Avery Fuller knew about them. Still, she sailed on through the crowds, her bright red mouth fixed in an inflexible smile. She knew she was delaying the inevitable, but Calliope wanted to put off the conversation with her mom for as long as she could. Because once she said it, once she spoke the words aloud,
Calliope Brown would be dead. Here lies Calliope Brown, as beautiful as she was vicious. She died without anyone ever truly knowing her, she thought bitterly. For once, making up an epitaph for her lost alias wasn't particularly amusing. She turned a wide loop around the dance floor, wondering if Elise might already be asleep, when she saw a couple on a terrace far below. Something about them seemed familiar, though they were too far away for Calliope to tell. They were ducked behind a no-access sign, where they probably thought they had utter privacy, and they would have, if not for her. No one else was looking in that direction. For lack of anything better to do, Calliope craned her neck and zoomed in with her contacts. She was startled to realize that it was Avery and Atlas Fuller. Avery had tilted her head up and was talking emphatically to Atlas about something, probably telling him the truth about Calliope and Elise. Seized by a morbid sort of curiosity, Calliope zoomed in closer and became aware of something distinctly odd that was going on between the siblings. The expressions on both their faces, the proprietary way that Avery stepped toward him, lifted the hairs on the back of Calliope's neck. And then, to Calliope's shock, they flung their bodies together and kissed. At first, Calliope assumed she'd been mistaken. But the more she zoomed, the more certain she felt that it was definitely Avery and Atlas. She watched in fascinated horror as the kiss went on and on, Avery rising up on tiptoe, her hands in Atlas's hair. Calliope blinked her vision back to normal and looked away. She took a few deep breaths, a dull roar echoing through her scorched brain. It all made an awful, twisted kind of sense. She remembered Atlas telling her that he'd run away to Africa because he'd gotten himself into a complicated mess. She remembered the bitter resentment Avery had shown her that morning after the under-the-sea party when she'd realized that Calliope had slept over. Even the way Avery and Atlas talked about each other, the way they always seemed to have a radar on what the other was doing. Calliope had assumed that was just excessive sibling fondness, but clearly it was so much more. All the pieces were fitting together into the truth, like shards of a warped, broken mirror that couldn't possibly depict reality. Except it did. She stood there for a while, listening to the wind whistle around the corners of this extravagant tower. You could barely hear it beneath the music and gossip and laughter, but it was there. Calliope imagined that the wind was angry at being ignored. She understood the feeling. She leaned forward on the railing, thinking of Avery and all the threats she'd delivered earlier, and smiled. There was nothing soft in the expression. It was a cold, calculating smile. A smile of victory. Because Calliope was done being pushed around by any of the Fullers. So Avery Fuller wanted to play games. Well, Calliope could play games, too. She'd played with the best of them, all over the world. And she had no intention of losing now that she had something on Avery. Something just as dangerous as what Avery had on her. She knew what she'd seen, and how she could use it to her advantage. Avery could protest all she liked, but Calliope wasn't going anywhere. She was in New York to stay. Lita. Holy shit! Lita thought in a blurred daze. What was happening? She was walking with the altitude waitress. Mariel, she remembered, that was it. The other girl had one hand around Lita's waist and another on her forearm, closed tight around her like a vice. Somehow they'd walked along a service road far upstream of the mirrors and were down by the ocean. The dark waters of the Persian Gulf were there on her right, looking cold and implacable. Lita glanced around in every direction, but didn't see anyone. I want to go back to the party. She tried to pull on Mariel's arm, but the other girl was dragging her stubbornly forward. She looked down at her feet and realized they were bare. What happened to my shoes? We took them off, because you couldn't walk in them on the sand. Mariel said patiently.
But I don't want to be on the sand. I want to go back to the party.
Let's sit for just a minute, Mariel suggested instead, in a low, soothing voice.
You're too drunk to go back to the party.
It was true. Lita felt sleepy and disoriented, all her neurons firing at quarter speed. Her feet tripped sluggishly down the beach toward the water. The wind whipped around them, its fingers reaching up into Lita's hair to tear her curls loose, but Lita hardly felt it.
How had she gotten this smashed?
The last thing she remembered was having that drink with Mariel. Surely she'd had more than one, otherwise she wouldn't feel this way.
Here.
Mariel tried to guide Lita down a steep slope toward the shore. Lita shook her head in mute protest. She didn't want to step that close to the water. Its black surface caught the moonlight and reflected it back at her, shining and opaque, making it impossible to gauge its depths.
Come on, Lita,
Mariel insisted, her tone brooking no argument, and pinched Lita's side through her filmy gown.
Hey,
Lita protested. She half slipped, half fell down the sand dune, landing on her side. She tried to stand, but wasn't strong enough. She gritted her teeth and just managed to push herself into a seated position. A few buildings rose up out of the darkness like primordial monsters, full of angry-looking machinery and hydrojets. Lita suddenly longed for the pulse and laughter of the party. She didn't like this. What had happened to Watt? Did he know where she was?
Here we go,
Mariel said, trying to scoot Lita closer to the water. Lita shrank back uneasily, but the other girl was much stronger. One of Lita's bare toes accidentally touched a wave, and she let out a yelp. It was ice cold. Wasn't this a tropical ocean? Or was she so drunk she couldn't feel anything properly anymore?
We need to talk.
It's about Eris. Mariel's eyes bored into Lita's. Something wasn't right. Every instinct in Lita's body was screaming at her to run away, to get out, but she couldn't move. She was trapped in this strange place as Mariel crouched there next to her.
How do you know Eris?
She asked, and something menacing glittered in Mariel's eyes.
She was my friend,
the other girl said slowly.
Mine too,
Lita slurred. Her mouth found it difficult to form sentences.
But what happened the night she died?
Mariel pressed.
I know she didn't fall. She wasn't even drunk. What happened that you aren't telling me?
Lita burst into sudden tears, angry, ugly sobs that racked her body. She marveled at the clarity of her own emotion. What was happening to her? She was long past drunk. She was high, maybe, but this was unlike any drug she'd ever taken, as if she'd become detached from her own body and was hovering far above it. She was suddenly very afraid. Watt's face kept swimming up in her consciousness, the eerie way he'd listened to her confession without blinking. He hadn't hesitated to hurt her. He didn't care about her. No one cared about her. She didn't deserve to be cared about.
It's okay, Lita. I'm here,
Mariel was saying over and over, the repetition vaguely soothing.
I'm listening. It's okay.
I want my mom,
Lita heard herself say. She wanted to run into Ilara's arms the way she had when she was little and admit what she'd done. My sweet Lita, her mom would always say, tucking Lita's hair behind her ear. You're too stubborn for your own good. Don't you understand that things won't always go your way? And then her mom would punish her. But Lita always accepted it, because she knew there was love behind the punishment.
It wasn't my fault,
she whispered now, as if her mom were right here and listening. Her eyes were closed.
What do you mean?
They were all there, Watt and Avery and Rylan. They knew it was dangerous. They should have pulled me away from the edge, shouldn't have let Eris get so close. I didn't mean to push her.
You pushed Eris off the roof?
I told you it was an accident!
Leda cried out, rasping. A fire seemed to be kindling in her head, flames licking at the inside of her brain where Watt kept his computer. She imagined the blaze burning everything, leaving nothing in its wake but ash.
How did you keep the others from telling the police if they were up there?
Mariel was shaking with disgust.
I knew things about them. I told them that they had to keep my secret or I wouldn't keep theirs.
In utter horror, Leda heard herself telling Mariel everything. About Avery and Atlas, about Rylan stealing from Cord, and worst of all, Watt's secret, that he had an illegal quantum computer lodged in his brain. Some dazed part of Leda knew that she shouldn't be saying these things, but she couldn't help it. It was as if someone else was saying the words, as if they were being pulled out of her of their own volition. You people are even worse than I thought, Mariel said at last when Leda was through.
Yes,
Leda moaned, knowing she deserved this, welcoming it.
You should never have brought Eris into all this. It wasn't fair,
Mariel hissed, and Leda could hear the naked hatred in her voice. Mariel despised her. A wounded stubbornness elbowed its way to the forefront of Leda's mind.
Yeah, right. Eris was part of it, too, she protested. She was fucking my dad, after all.
Mariel was deathly silent. Leda tried to rise to her feet, but her body wasn't working properly, and she crashed violently to the ground. Her legs were bent at an awkward angle beneath her. The sand felt rough and grainy on her cheek. She closed her eyes, wincing at the pain, tears blurring her vision. But it had already been blurred anyway.
Please, help me get back,
she croaked. She still didn't understand how she'd gotten this drunk.
How many drinks did I have?
Mariel leaned over her. Her face was as hard and unyielding as if it had been carved from stone.
Just the one.
But I drugged it.
What? Why?
Leda wanted to ask, but pushed that aside in favor of her more immediate problem.
Please help me get back.
The water was so close, and the tide was rising, creeping toward her with ice-cold fingers. She could see it, like a dangerous black mirror, as full of secrets as her own black heart. No, she thought. She didn't have any secrets anymore. She'd given them all away. Even the ones that weren't hers to give. Mariel laughed, a sharp laugh that had no mirth in it. The sound was like a million small slaps to Leda's face.
Leda Cole, you really think I'm helping you go back so that you can keep screwing with other people's lives? You killed the girl I loved.
I didn't mean to,
Leda tried to say, but she wasn't sure if she'd really spoken the words or just thought them. Her eyes were too heavy to keep open. Her hand was touching the water, but she couldn't move it. She felt a distant twinge of panic, imagining the water slowly flowing over her whole body, its darkness pulling insistently toward the matching darkness inside her.
Before I leave, there's one thing you should know. Eris wasn't having an affair with your dad.
Mariel spoke slowly, each word delivered with frosty clarity.
She was spending time with him, yes, but not for the reason you think.
Which just goes to show how bad a person you are, that you assume the worst of people. The words seemed to be coming from very far away, and Leda was falling, but with every last force of her being, she listened, reaching up to hear what Mariel was saying because it frightened her, and because she could hear the truth behind the hatred, ringing with the force of a gong.
Your dad was Eris's dad, too. You killed your sister, Leda,
Mariel spat. And then Leda did fall into the blackness,
and there was nothing more.
Watt had been looking for Lita for an hour now. He'd circled the entire party at least three times, barreling clumsily into the thick of the dance floor, edging through the gardens alongside the tower to check whether Lita might be in there. He'd gone upstairs to check the hotel room, but it was empty. Desperate, he'd even flickered Avery to ask whether she'd seen Lita, but Avery hadn't answered. Normally, of course, he would have just gotten Nadia to hack Lita's contacts and determined her location that way. But her contacts feed was blank, which meant that wherever she was, Lita was asleep or passed out. Or dead, some horrible voice in him whispered, which he studiously ignored. "Any update, Nadia?" She was doggedly searching through the contact feeds of everyone at the party, keeping an eye out for any hint of where Lita had gone. This was all his fault. If he hadn't run away from Lita when she opened up to him, none of this would have happened. He couldn't imagine how rejected she must have felt, confiding in him only to have him turn and disappear. "Actually, I might," Nadia replied, and Watt sprung to alertness. "I'm not sure it's Lita," Nadia hastened to assure him. "But there's a girl passed out on the beach, a couple kilometers north of the party. Someone just filed an anonymous report to security, saying the person was a threat." A threat? Who would have reported that about Lita? Watt had already started running toward the northern exit. "When will security get there?" "They haven't mobilized yet. I intercepted the report before it hit their monitors. Do you want me to wipe it from the log?" Watt closed his eyes against the wind, feeling a cold sweat break out at his hairline. He had a terrible feeling that something had happened, something awful that Lita wouldn't want security to see. He remembered their visit to rehab, how well her recovery was going. If she'd done drugs tonight, and the Fuller's Dubai security brought her in, her parents would send Lita back to rehab for sure, and probably to a more intense place this time. Somewhere that Watt would never get to see her. And if she'd truly done something threatening, she would need his help. He felt suddenly selfish. What if Lita was in real danger, and by holding off the security bots, he risked her life? "Watt?" Nadia prompted. "Keep it cloaked from security for now," he told Nadia, hoping he wouldn't regret this. "What's the fastest way to the girl's location?" Nadia directed his gaze to a stray hoverboard that lay propped at the edge of the party. Watt had never ridden one of these before. They were an expensive highlighter toy, but how hard could it be? He grabbed the board. It beeped in momentary protest, since it was registered to a different thumbprint and voice ID, but Nadia quickly hacked it, and the tiny micromotors whizzed to life. Ghostly arrows overlaid his field of vision, like some kind of real-life video game quest. Watt inclined his weight onto his toes and the board leapt forward, responding to the command. He tried to make it go faster, but it bucked upward. He cursed under his breath. "Nadia, can you drive?" Nadia obediently took over the hoverboard's directional system, pushing the board to max speed as it skimmed forward, just centimeters above the uneven surface of the ground. The wind tore at his hair and the fabric of his tux, stinging Watt's eyes so hard that he was forced to close them, trusting everything to Nadia, but it wouldn't be the first time. He held his breath and crouched lower on the board, letting his fingers trace blindly along its aerodynamic surface. Finally, it came to a stop, and Watt half-tumbled off. There she was, Lita, looking like some strange version of herself, crumpled unnaturally on the sand. Her white dress fanned around her like an angel's wings, a sharp contrast to her smooth, dark skin. Her legs were already partially submerged in the rising tide of the ocean. "Oh God, oh God," he thought, scrambling down to pull Lita into his arms, and then his heart leapt with joy, because she was shivering, and that at least meant she was alive. "Why is she freezing like this?" he said aloud, rubbing his hands on Lita's bare shoulders to create some friction, but her head tipped back alarmingly, forcing him to cradle it in one hand. "Is it the ocean?" He trailed one hand in the water, but it was a pleasant tropical lukewarm, just as he'd expected.
I believe she's taken some drugs, Nadia was saying. I would need a med bot to do a full exam, but whatever they are, they've severely constricted her arteries. She's not getting any blood to her extremities. Watt shrugged off his tux jacket and wrapped it around Lita like a cocoon. He cradled Lita in his arms and began to carry her back to the hoverboard, one hand still placed carefully behind her neck and the other under her knees. He managed to settle her sloppily onto the board, curling her on her side and then strapping her down with the emergency safety cord.
Nadia, he said hoarsely, how are we going to get her back?
We'll smuggle her into the hotel on the hover. Leave that part to me. Into Watt's mind came the sudden realization that he and Nadia had gotten it all wrong. He'd set out to change Lita's opinion of him, but he was the one whose mind had ended up changing about her. What was it she'd said all those weeks ago? We're the same, Watt, you and me. And she'd been right. He knew Lita, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally. Hell, he might know her better than he knew anyone else in his life. She was maddening and stubborn and tormented and deeply flawed, but so was he. And maybe the important thing wasn't finding someone without flaws, but just someone whose flaws complemented your own. The hoverboard started toward the hotel, moving more slowly now to keep Lita from falling off. Watt took off running in its wake. You really care about her, don't you? Nadia asked him, oddly subdued. Yeah. Watt couldn't believe it had taken a life-or-death crisis for him to realize it. But he really did. Avery. Avery had left the party. She'd returned to the hotel, but once she walked in the enormous entrance, all curved, carved stone and glittering tiles, she'd found that she wasn't ready to go upstairs. She didn't want to face her cold, solitary bed, a bed that would never have Atlas in it again. The prospect of a life without him stretched before her, empty and bleak and impossibly, torturously long. She wandered over to the dramatic windows of the hotel lobby and stood there a while, just looking out into the endless black of the sky. The stars were so bright here. She wondered when the next round of fireworks would begin. An arrangement of mood flowers on a table near her began to glow. Stupid things never worked, Avery thought, because they were flashing a hot, angry red when all she really felt was hollow. She kept working on her drink without registering what it was. Behind her, she occasionally heard voices, the click of heels on the polished floor as people moved through the lobby on the way to their rooms. Everything that had happened tonight, learning the truth about Calliope, confronting her, and then, worst of all, the way Atlas had told her goodbye, with that aching finality in his voice, had all left Avery strangely empty. Her mind had become a swirling, churning vortex with no bottom. She took another sip of her drink, hoping it would fill the void that threatened to break her in two.
Avery?
Hey, she said, not even turning at the sound of Cord's voice. She just kept looking at the dark stretch of water below them, the bridges spanning the space, dotted with lights. Party guests moved back and forth across in a dance of scattered shadows. She wondered how many of them were with the person they loved tonight, and how many of them were alone, like her.
What are you doing here?
He asked. She knew what he meant. What was she doing standing by herself in the dim light of the window? Where have you been all night? She asked, since she hadn't seen much of him. Cord shrugged.
I only just got here. Guess I'm a little late to the party. It's a long story, he added, in answer to her questioning look. But I was with Bryce.
Avery nodded. They were both silent for a while, the only sound the occasional murmur of hotel guests and the distant strains of music. She couldn't stop thinking about Atlas, about the look on his face when he told her that they were through. She wanted to drown that memory out, pound it into oblivion until there was nothing left of it. She'd thought that alcohol would help, but all it had managed to do was sharpen her melancholy.
She wondered if she would ever be able to forget.
Avery, are you okay?
Cord asked. Startled, Avery turned to look at Cord. Really look at him. Driven by some foreign impulse, she rose up to kiss him. For an instant, Cord tensed, startled, not kissing her back. Then one of his hands was cradling her head, and the other was curled around her waist. And they felt scaldingly good on her numb, cold skin. The kiss was rough and insistent, a little frantic.
Avery, what was that?
Cord finally asked, stepping away.
I'm sorry.
Avery tried not to feel panicked, but the moment Cord's lips had left hers, the darkness was back, worse than before, tugging relentlessly at the corners of her mind, dragging her down into its endless, terrible depths. She wasn't sure why she'd kissed Cord. Some logical part of her knew that there were plenty of reasons she should stay away. He was her friend, and it would ruin the friendship. And, of course, the biggest reason of all, she loved Atlas. But Atlas no longer wanted her, which was the only reason she was here with Cord, instead of in his arms. No matter what she did right now, Atlas would still be gone. She leaned in again, knowing she might regret this, knowing she was playing with fire, just as a message from Lita danced before the backs of her closed eyelids. Where are you? Avery hesitated. She didn't know what had prompted it, but the message was enough to make her step away, like a cosmic stroke of fate, protecting her from doing something with Cord that she could never turn back from. Cord looked startled. He knew her so well. Avery wondered if he could read her right now, could see how hurt she was, how close she'd almost come to kissing him again. I'm sorry, but I need to go, she whispered, and ran toward the elevator bank without looking back. Rylan. What a fantastic night it had been, Rylan reflected as she walked through the enormous entrance to the hotel lobby. She couldn't decide which part had been her favorite. She had listened to the music for a while and wandered across the beautiful bridges. She and Lita had perched at a table to eat 3 full martini glasses of the bacon risotto. She'd even danced with a few of her classmates, the girls from English class she sometimes ate lunch with. Truthfully, the whole night had been perfect, except for the fact that she'd never found Cord. She wondered if for some reason he hadn't come, after all. Rylan didn't feel too disappointed, though. They would see each other again soon enough, when they were both back in the tower. She started toward the hotel's private elevator bank when a shadow moved in her peripheral vision, and something about it gave her pause. It was Cord. He was over by the windows with Avery Fuller, the 2 of them alone in the dimly lit, deserted lobby. Of course she would see Cord when she was least expecting it. Rylan swayed in her heels, debating whether to go say hi. And then her body went cold all over as Avery leaned up to kiss him. They stood there, their faces pressed together, clinging to each other. Rylan wanted desperately to look away, but she couldn't. Some cruel, masochistic instinct forced her to watch. Her blood pounded through her body, close to the surface of her skin, like liquid fire. Or maybe liquid pain. Then Rylan realized how she looked, just standing there watching Cord and Avery like a complete fool. And what if they glanced up to see her? She had the presence of mind to dart toward the elevator bank, where she began hitting the button furiously, blinking back tears. How funny hearts were, Rylan thought, that she wasn't dating Cord, had no claim on him anymore. Yet this hurt her as much as ever. More so, even, now that she knew the girl he'd chosen over her. She'd been stupid to think that she could ever truly belong in this world. Oh, they let her attend their school, show up at their parties. But she wasn't one of them. Rylan realized with a startling clarity that she never would be, no matter how hard she tried. Why would a boy like Cord ever pick a girl like Rylan when he could have Avery Fuller?
Lita. Lita screamed and kept running down the corridor. It went on and on, no doors or end in sight, just the jagged floor beneath her and the shadows chasing her, flapping their great dusty wings above her face. They looked like harpies scratching her with her claws, cackling maliciously. Lita recognized them for what they were. They were all her secrets. Her cruelty to Avery, her bitterness toward her father, the things she'd done to Watt, every last one of her misdeeds, her years of meddling and spying and plotting, all coming home to roost at last. And foremost among them was what she'd done to Eris. The harpies came closer, scratching at her face. They drew blood. Lita fell to her knees, wailing, and threw her hands up. A sudden wetness on her face jostled her awake. She rubbed at her eyes. They stung a little. She put her hands below her, feeling the unfamiliar, lumpy surface. She was on a couch somewhere.
Lita, you're awake!
Watt's face appeared before her, his strong jaw dusted with a shadow of stubble.
You've been out for hours. What happened? Nadia hacked a medbot, got it to deliver adrenaline, which we've been feeding you in small doses. She thought you might be getting close to waking just now, which is why I threw water on you.
Poor Watt, Lita thought drowsily. He always rambled when he got anxious. It was so endearing. And then her mind flagged to sudden violent alert as she remembered. Watt couldn't be trusted. Watt was the enemy.
Let me go!
She shouted, though it came out raspy and broken. She tried to stand up, only to tumble toward the floor instead. Watt swooped down and caught her.
Shh, Lita, it's okay,
he murmured, settling her back on the cushions, but not before she'd gotten a look at their surroundings. They were in their hotel room in the Moon Tower. She regretted not booking Watt his own room, the way she'd done for rehab. Where could she escape now?
What happened? He asked again.
Lita reached deep within herself, gathering every last shred of her strength. It wasn't much, because she felt as though she'd been crunched beneath the weight of the tower itself. But she managed to lean back, her eyes half closed. And then, in a quick, sudden motion, she shot her fist upward toward Watt's head. It hit his skull with a satisfying, resounding crack, right where she'd been aiming, at the spot where Nadia was implanted. Watt yelped, momentarily blinded by pain. Lita took advantage of his confusion, pushing herself up and trying to run away. She staggered a few steps, but the world spun off kilter, the ground veering dangerously upward, and she fell heavily back to the carpet.
What the hell, Lita? Next time your head might hit a table, okay?
This time Watt kept his distance, crouching a few meters from where she lay on her side. He seemed to know better than to try to help her. Slowly, Lita sat up. Her head was pounding and her mouth felt dry. The brightness hurt her eyes, and she lifted a hand to shade them, but the room was already growing dimmer. She looked sharply at Watt. She hadn't seen him make any motions for the room comp. Then she realized that, of course, his damned supercomputer had done it.
I hate you,
she managed to say, through her pain and her violent, rending grief.
Go to hell, Watt. Whatever happened to you, I didn't do it. What do you remember?
He asked urgently. Lita pulled her knees to her chest. She didn't care that her gorgeous white gown was ruined, ripped at the hem, smudged with dirt and blood. It didn't matter. All that mattered was that she was here, still breathing, still alive. That bitch left her for dead, wanted her to fall into the ocean and drown. Yet she'd survived.
Have you sent me to jail yet, or were you waiting till I was awake? She snapped. Don't lie to me anymore, Watt. I know your computer is in your brain. You were recording me earlier when I told you about Eris, weren't you?
Watt stared at her in evident shock, the color draining from his face. He reached unconsciously up to that same spot on his head, as if to check whether Nadia was still there.
How did you know? So you don't deny it? No,